This is from chapter 38 of the Tao Te Ching. It's a little long, but it's a full page. Let me just give it to you. It's about 25 lines, so 24 lines. The classic Chinese writing is always also in couplets, like the classic Hebraic form, always in couplets. The second line bears always a relationship to the first line, so that the sense is not in what the first line says, but in what the relationship of the second line is to the first line. It's the same in Sanskrit. Sanskrit, Chinese, Hebrew always have this kind of a structure. The intelligence is not what the first line says. It's the relationship of the second line to the first line, so that the intelligence is reading between the lines. And in order to read between the lines, you have to see the lines as pairs. And if you don't see the lines as pairs, you're reading prose. But if you see the lines as pairs, you're reciting poetry. You see how simple the difference is? But how profound the difference is. If you read line by line, that's a kind of logic roteness which this material world prizes. If you read the couplets together and allow the space between the lines to generate meaning, you're transcended not only this world, but the language and the mentality that kept you electrocuted, frozen to this world. Then you're free. The highest virtue is not virtuous. Therefore, it truly has virtue. Okay, this first line has te three times. The highest te is not te. Therefore, it is truly te. That's how the original reads. The highest te is not te. Therefore, it is truly te. The second line, the lowest te never loses sight of its te, therefore it has no true te. If you were diagramming this in form, it would be a contrapositive. What occurs is not what occurs, that's why it occurs. What doesn't occur doesn't really not occur. And that's why it doesn't occur. Notice the way in which Lao Tzu uses a noun, the word, te, and he juggles this to show you we're free to juggle these terms around. Don't be stymied by the terms. The terms are just tools for you. You're much more important than any of these tools, if you know how to use them. And language is the most subtle of all tools because it tends to be the mother of all man-made things. And if you consider yourself as a thing among man-made things, language is going to dominate you unconsciously. The fairy tale thing is that, saying is that you're really under a spell. Whose spell are you under? You're under your own spell because you believed what people have been telling you. Not the content that they've been telling you, but you believed in their capacity to tell you. And what Lao Tzu is saying very subtly is, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That may or may not be the case. But we have the right to inspect this condition, this situation, and see for ourselves whether this is in fact what's going to go down. Maybe, maybe not. So he says, the highest te takes no action, yet it has no reason for acting this way. Now, what's the paradox on? It's not on the noun, but on the movement of the noun. See, he's shifted. So the second couplet goes from te, what it is not, to what it does not. Second line, the highest humanity takes action, yet it has no reason for acting this way. Now he pairs te and humanity together. What is the word for people here? Rin. People. He pairs that together. Both te, which is always of an individual, and humanity, which is the whole of all individuals together, have parallel activity modes. The highest virtue takes no action, yet it has no reason for acting this way. The highest humanity takes action, yet it has no reason for acting this way. The highest righteousness takes action, and it has its reasons for acting this way. The highest propriety takes action, and when no one responds to it, then it angrily rolls up its sleeves and forces people to comply. Now notice how Lao Tzu's mind is working here when he writes about virtue, about te. When he writes Tao, he's always concerned that whatever string figure you make with your line of development, you be sure that when you pull it that you've not made a knot or a bow or anything. You can pull it free. When he makes statements about te, he shows you that now the mental string figures of the line of argument that you make will stay in place. So that you have to concern yourself now not with Tao, what always is what it is, but with te, which becomes what you make of it. And that stays. As long as this world lasts, the things that we will really make will last. It's like the discovery in brain structure, that the structure of the Japanese brain is different from the structure of the European brain. The language centers are in different areas of the brain. Because the languages have different natures and influence the physiological structure of the organism. So you can see how indelible what man does is. It changes the very structure of his brain. You are much more what you think than what you say than what you eat. If you think that you are what you eat, to an incredible level, you are what you say. It's a very profound realization. Lao Tzu then says, he's gotten to this point, whatever we do really stays there. So be cautious of what you do, but in this mode. Therefore, when the way is lost, when Tao is lost, only then do we have Te. When virtue is lost, only then do we have humanity. When humanity is lost, only then do we have righteousness. And when righteousness is lost, only then do we have propriety. As for propriety, it's but the thin edge of loyalty and sincerity and the beginning of disorder. Notice that the five-phase energy cycle not only occurs in the ecology of wholeness, but occurs in a five-phase de-evolution. It also unravels. So that when you're mature about this, the five-phase energy cycle implies 10 phases altogether. So that when one is looking in a cosmic way, you're not looking at a five-phase energy cycle, but the double mode in which the five phases occur, so you're looking at 10. And not only 10, but because of this doubling of the 10, If one looks at the Tao in terms of the I Ching's expressive structure, what is the module of the expressive structure of the I Ching? The hexagram. So that you're looking at not only a double five, but a double six. So when you look at the cosmos in a cosmic way, not at the cosmos in a limited way, but at the cosmos in a cosmic way, you look at 10 and 12. And so when you come to like Chinese astrology, you talk about the 10 earthly branches and the 12 stems. Notice how there is a kind of a logic in the development of this, but the development is not in terms of kind of a simplistic logical form, but in terms of an expanded or an amplified realization. Where did the hexagrams come from? The hexagrams came from a pair of trigrams. So that when you get to a cosmic view of the hexagram in its universal efficacy, it isn't just the hexagram, but it's 12 nature, so that the doubling is a characteristic of the hexagram, not only in its origin from the trigrams, two trigrams, but in its very nature. Notice that the pairingness carries all the way through as an essential element. The Mahayana says that this is the perfuming of existence by Tathagata. The pairing always is occurring, whether you're aware of it or not. So that when you're dealing with some manifestation, you know, if you're counting up what you can see, there is another aspect which you're not seeing but is definitely taking part. And so you have to attend to that also. How do you attend to that? It's not taking part. You attend to it by wu wei, by not doing, by consciously not doing. So to a Chinese Taoist, there's not only a right way to do something, there's a right way not to do something else, which is a compliment to it. It seems complicated to the mind, but Lao Tzu assures us that it's just extremely comfortable for us, that our true nature is effortless in this mode, that this is how we really are. And to the extent that it's complicated in an effort, to that extent you have become deluded by your mind. And he concludes, as for propriety, it is but the thin edge of loyalty and sincerity and the beginning of disorder, and foreknowledge is but the flower of the way and the beginning of stupidity. Therefore, the great man, this would be the true man, the true man who is capable of releasing the spirit. Therefore, the great man dwells in the thick and doesn't dwell in the thin. Dwells in the fruit and doesn't dwell in the flower. Therefore he rejects that and takes this. This is as profound here as what Arjuna comes to understand in the Bhagavad Gita. If you only do this in thought, you will reach a perfect limbo, because you'll realize that what you can do is ultimately only half of what really there is. There's a whole half that you can't do except by not doing it. But if you only think that in your mind, you will reach a limbo of not doing anything at all and fall into that imbalance. So the trigger is, whatever you can do, do that. And what you don't do, be aware that you're not doing it. Therefore you do this, which you can, and you don't do this, which you can. Notice how this frees one to live in wisdom. It's a little subtle, but if you'll follow this, or if you go through the tape, I think that the exposition, it feels like it's been clear to me. So let's come to our third page, which I prepared for you, and this is where you bring this in. The pattern of human being in the universe. Or, if we use a Greek phrase here, poesis sophia, the poetry of wisdom. The poetry of wisdom. There is a five-phase energy cycle, which comes from the 42nd chapter of the Tao Te Ching, on page 11 of this edition that I'm using. Tao, nature, ritual, myth, symbol. But its second five phase is Tao, magic, art, history, science. So that the 10 aspect is here. Notice our two-year program are the eight segments of this 10 which can be talked about, and the two segments that can't be talked about are both the Tao. But notice that if one didn't understand that the Tao is occurring at the beginning of both cycles, that you would misbase, you would misplace yourself. It's like not understanding that there's a decimal point, and so every time that you compute, you're off. And look how many times you have to compute during a lifetime, how much would you be off? The skew builds geometrically. So that very quickly, within, say, 1 month or 6 months, one would be so far off base that you feel uncomfortable with yourself. So you always have to put it in. Notice the superiority of higher mathematics once the concept of zero was introduced. The concept of zero came in about the 3rd century AD in India. It was an incredible level of realization that zero, as a contextual place maker, is essential to accurate articulation of sequences. Zero counts, in other words. It has to count. There's no other way than to have this kind of step in powers. So the very essence of exponential quantification is bringing in powers of 10, which includes a zero. So we have these 10 here, and you can see that when it's written here as Tao, nature, ritual, myth, symbol, Tao, magic, art, history, science. Saying it in this mode is all on the level of images. This is all image level. If you say it on the idea level, the first line reads experience. Tao, nature, ritual, myth, symbol. That's experience. The second line reads Tao, magic, art, history, science. That's consciousness. So you can use either the idea or you can use the image, the idea level or the image level. If you use the image level, that's in a feeling way, feeling tone. If you use the idea, that's in a thinking tone. So that the idea of experience includes in its structure the ecology of Tao, nature, ritual, myth, and symbol. The idea of consciousness includes the five-phase cycle, Tao, magic, art, history, science. Notice here, what is the middle term in both? The middle term in experience is ritual. The middle term in consciousness is art. In order to ensure your balance in that ecology. You don't have to look to the whole ecology. You have to look to the trigger in the ecology where you form the most precise participant, the most precise angle of participation. In experience, it's paying attention to your ritual comportment. What do you do? Action. And in consciousness, it's to your art. What are you making? What is it that you're making? And especially if you're trying to make yourself, make a person, you want to really look at that. And not be distracted and say, oh, I want to be like the gal in this magazine. Whoa, wait a minute. See? First of all, that's only an image in wood pulp. That's not you. And if you're designing yourself after that, oh man, the skew is incredible. And there isn't any human being that's going to be possible out of that model at all. One's going to be very proud if you get to be a centerfold and turn out to be a picture just like that out of wood pulp. Well, but that's absurd, you see. Because the whole reason for being is to be oneself. Not to be proud that some image of some appearance of oneself is a fish wrapper. I mean, that's nothing. Notice here that in the Greek presentation of it, and the way the Greek elements were, there were four elements: earth, air, water, and earth, fire, water, and air is the best ecology of it. But there was a quintessence on that level, which was virtue. And the Greek term for that is arete. Arete. Plato's dialogue, the Meno, is all about, can this be taught? And Socrates says, finally, well, we've discovered that it cannot be taught and it's not natural. That it is supernatural and is given as a divine gift to man. When man is real, God gives him that gift of virtue. Because it's not a thing which a man can make on his own. All he can do is make a receptor to receive that as a gift. And if he makes his antenna just right, he will receive that signal. Because that antenna is specifically made to receive that vibration. What is the vibration? The tone of the all. And if he's looking for the all, he's never going to find it. But if he builds a receiver to tune it in, it'll be there. Just as quick as you make that receiver, that signal will be received. The instant you finish that receiver, that signal is received. Spontaneous. There's no delay whatsoever. In time or space. None. And so the assiduosity should be not to find out who else has got it so I can get it from them, but build your own receiver. See? Okay. Arete, earth, fire, water, air. That's the Greek way of writing this ecology. Notice that you have to include among the four elements the quintessence, the fifth element, man's arete. But the complement to that makes it a 10. The complement to earth, fire, water, and air is cold, hot, moist, and dry. If you make a square out of the four elements, the diamond of the four qualities goes montaged on top of the square. Cold, hot, moist, dry. But just as there was arete on the element level, there is also aletheia, truth, on the process level. Does truth exist? You bet. And so you have aletheia, cold, hot, moist, dry. Truth is the quintessence of the process level. Notice here that they interpenetrate. that you can have a hot earth. You could have a cold fire. There are all sorts of relationships that happen between them. But in particular, there's an archetype of relationship, which is the staged ecology by which they primordially occur. So that while there are all different variations of it in the world, there is the pristine primal structural relationship which is capable of being seen in the mind. And the key to it, the movable thumb in the hand, in the five-phase process, is our arete, God's truth. And there is such a way, because of their nature, that there is an ability for an interchange to go on. Ritual and art are the entrances in the Chinese way. And here, fire and hot interchanges in the Greek way. But ritual and art have their efficacy because of Tao. Fire and hot have their efficacy because of arete and aletheia. Now the esoteric way in the Western tradition, where fire was always shown to be the sacred flame, Agni, and hot was always that quality in the human physiology, which was the warmest or the source of heat, which was the heart. So when you wanted to put the two together in an esoteric way, you put a flame on the heart. Do you know whose emblem the flame on the heart was? Martin Luther. Came to him in a vision. He a little bit lost control of the thing, but in the original insight, it was a pristine oracular vision, not developed out of logic, not developed out of a kind of a protest, but developed out of a vision of purity that was given and saw, it's the flaming heart. The best presentation of this symbolically in the Western tradition, incidentally, is a book of visionary writing by St. John of the Cross. About the flame of love. And it's the very best expression of this. You've all heard of The Dark Night of the Soul by him. There's another book by him. Well, there's several books by him, but that one on the flame of love is just exquisite. And he wrote it when he had been seized and manhandled, and he was jammed into a pit. They made a cubicle-shaped hole in the ground, and they put him in this pit and covered it up. And he was a little guy. He was only about 5'2". And they hoped to break it. And instead, he was the kind of spiritual being that when the body breaks, when the mind breaks, his spirit shines forth. And of course, yeah, the mind and the body broke, but St. John of the Cross didn't identify with the body or the mind. His spirit shone forth, and he wrote these great, great, great spiritual volumes out of that. Notice the language, the white, hot intensity of the purified heart. And you can read it even in translation, it pulls you over. My God. What a human being is capable of. What is he capable of? Of being the spiritual truth which he really is. It's like when they jailed Sri Aurobindo when he was a young man. They put him in a cell 5 feet square. It's not possible to stretch out. They left him in there for a year. No books, no paper, no visitors. And when they opened the door and he walked out a master yogi. He wasn't a political revolutionary anymore. He was a revolutionary for existence. He sat down and wrote Savitra. Instead of writing some kind of
Manifesto, he wrote an epic poem about the cosmic freeing of the spirit. And so the invitation is always, don't be afraid that they're going to break you. Let them break away. It just opens you up to be wherever you're going to be. So notice here that man's virtue is the completing quintessence. And that this generates the four corresponding conditions with aletheia, truth, as the generating quintessence. Anyway, there's this third page for you. So now we have Thoreau, and we have Lao Tzu. Let me just complete this by saying this. If you want to get to Lao Tzu, the best way is to see that the Tao Te Ching is related to the I Ching. Now, our reading in here has been in the discussion of the trigrams on page 262 of the I Ching and on the structure of the hexagrams, page 356 in our I Ching. The discussion of the trigrams, the structure of the hexagrams. And in between is the great Ta Chuan, Ta meaning great or large. And we want to take a look at the Ta Chuan, especially page 309, which has this mysterious diagram, the yellow river map, the whole two. So that I would like you to try and draw out for yourself. Draw the eight trigrams, then draw the whole two, this yellow river map. And then try and draw the 64 hexagrams. The Ho Tu, as the middle term, is the connecting element in a sequence which reads then 1, 2, 3. Trigrams, Ho Tu, hexagrams. While you're drawing this out, notice that it's not a complex task physiologically. In fact, it's tedious physiologically, all right? But while you're doing this, float above the tedium, above the physiological tedium. Be aware that you're drawing now something which is primordial, which is archetypal, and that you are now, by your own hand, making the expression be in this pattern. In other words, what's important is the experience that you have done this at least once yourself. If you ask a really good mason, does he always sight the bricks? He'll tell you no, that after you lay 20,000 bricks, you can feel it. You can feel if the brick is not in line. You want to try to get a little bit of the feel. And notice that the relationship between the hand and the eye results in the mind being triggered. The eye is the middle term between the hand and the mind. In just this way. So your hand is like the hexagrams. Your eye is like the Ho Tu. And your mind is like the hexagram. The trigrams are like the hand. Sorry, misstated. So that your process in doing this should begin to familiarize yourself in a kinesthetic way. Can I introduce that word, kinesthetic? So that you begin to get a feel for this, not just in your hand, but also in your eyes and also in your mind, a feel for this and how they work together. Then, in Origins, remember to take a look at that section that has the hand and the eye in relationship to the brain. And be sure and read that section, Intelligence, Language, and the Human Mind. It begins on page 180. Actually, there are illustrations, and it begins on 178, but 180 is the one. Language, intelligence. We don't have to get to aggression, sex, and human nature. I don't have to read that far. Just this section on intelligence, language, and the human mind. Okay. Please give me your sheets on this. While you're in your groups, maybe you can fill out these sheets. Or if you're... I hope that the groups will meet. I hope that you're meeting. And now the third group, which hasn't formed, doesn't have a group discussion leader or focus, I'm going to come back and sit with you today, and we'll find somebody who will function as that focus. But Chris's group and Taker's group are pretty well set. And if you're not in either of those two groups, then you're in this third group. And we'll meet in the back room, and we'll figure out something to do. Thank you.